What's going on, everyone, and welcome to the Overwhelmed Gamer Podcast, where every other week we dive into a gaming topic, share what's currently gripping our controllers, explore the fascinating realm of homebrew games, plus, sometimes, but not always, we get an exclusive interview with talented homebrew community members and or developers, and we wrap things up with our takes of the week, all while sipping on a cocktail or two. This week, we have said exclusive interview. I got the chance to sit down with Joseph Blair of Rivet Gun Games and discuss his upcoming NES game, Sunset Land. We also discussed the fallout of all the fun we had at the Midwest Gaming Classic. I am your host, Jason, so grab your drinks, unless you're driving. Don't do that. And let's go.
Welcome, welcome, gamers and tipsy adventurers, to the Overwhelmed Gamer Podcast, where we unravel the mysteries of our game backlog, sip on some questionable drinks, and dive headfirst into the nostalgic world of classics and the mind-bending realm of homebrews.
Hey, welcome back to the show, everybody. Quick bit of housekeeping before we move on. I'd like to invite everybody to check out all of our social media presence. I post all kinds of gaming content, from reviews, homebrew info, walks down memory lane. Just look for Overwhelmed Gamer on pretty much any social media platform of your choice. I post the same stuff everywhere, so pick your poison. Check us out. See if you like anything. Streaming stuff. I did change my schedule, like I talked about last week. So now my guaranteed streaming days are Tuesdays and Thursdays at 10:30 Central Time on Twitch, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, X, whatever the heck you want to call it. So stop on by if you'd like to watch me stream homebrew games mostly, but sometimes I do a little bit of, retro games too. Right now I'm streaming Dragon Warrior, and I'm almost done with that, I think. I'm guessing I'll probably wrap it up this week. I might even try and fit in an extra stream at some point this week just to make sure that I get done with it so I can get on to one of these other great homebrew games to start pretty soon. What else we got going on? YouTube. Yeah, that's right. I started a YouTube channel. And it's really bad right now. It's really bad, but we're going to try and get better. I'm having fun with it. I do things like homebrew review, not really reviews yet, but I do just kind of rundowns of homebrew games that I'm checking out, just to kind of try and bring attention to anybody that maybe hasn't seen it. And the mine's going to be a little bit different because I'm not doing just games that maybe that are coming out that are new. I'm doing games that maybe have already been out for a couple of years that people aren't aware of, or that I wasn't aware of, or that I just got to, whatever. So there's not going to be any like super formula as far as, yeah, we're just doing new games. We're going to do any homebrew game that I come across that I want to talk about. So there's that. And I'm also doing reviews right now. I started doing my 90-second game reviews. If you follow me on social media, you've probably seen them all over the place. And I'm starting with that, but I might change it up or branch out or make them longer or something to that effect. I don't know. I'm still kind of playing with the idea of how to do everything. So if you have any suggestions or any of that kind of stuff, feel free to shoot me a message and just say, hey, you suck at this. You should be doing it different. So I am all about constructive criticism when it comes to that. So no big deal. But that is it for the housekeeping. Now it's time to get into a little segment that I like to call What's Gripping Our Controllers. If you're new to the podcast, we like to take this segment to talk about what we've been up to since our last episode. Everything from game pickups, what we're playing currently, any other thing that comes to mind, I guess. And if you notice, I have no co-host this week. So mainly, to be honest, what happened was I hate them now. So I'm no longer letting them on the show. They smell. Keg is not fit for human consumption of any kind. No, I'm just kidding. We just had a snag where our recording didn't quite get recorded, or it got hung up in limbo somewhere. So it just, the software I used just kept saying it was processing, and I really still wanted to get an episode out so you get to hear me babble for by myself for a while. And there may be a few more episodes like that. The podcast is kind of ever evolving, I guess, and it's hard to find the right times to get together to actually record the podcast. So we'll be bouncing back and forth with all kinds of different ideas. But anyway, what have I been playing since last time? Not too much has changed there. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is still the modern game that I'm getting into. Still loving it. Not a whole lot to say that everybody else probably hasn't already said on the internet. So, but still a great game. That's going to take me a little bit. Those super long games like that, I don't usually have a ton of time for, but I'm loving this one so much that I'm still going to make time to finish it before I move on to anything else in the modern realm anyway. Also got the chance to play Krabby Attack for the first time. That's a NES homebrew that I don't want to get too much into because I actually have an interview with the developer that made that game coming up. So I kind of want to save my opinion is it's great. I love it. I'll give you my opinion, but I want to save the details for an upcoming podcast, probably in a few weeks. Other than that, still playing Dragon Warrior. Like I said in the last segment, I'm really enjoying it. It's the first one for the NES. And it's been fun. It's a grind. I'm almost finished with it. I think I'll like it more once I'm done with it, to be honest with you. It's one of those games where I'm at the point now where I'm like, all right, I get it. I've enjoyed my time with it, but I'm kind of ready to move on. So, but I got to finish it because I've never played a Dragon Warrior game, and I don't know how that ever happened. But yeah, so need to make sure I finish that one before I move on to anything else retro there, and I really want to get into whichever homebrew game I want to be streaming next. So that's it for really what I've been playing. As far as pickups, so since last we spoke, we hit the Midwest Gaming Classic, and I was able to pick up, one, two, three, I'm just counting them here on my shelf, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 homebrew games and an Atari 2600. I take that back. Add two more to that list. I got a couple loose carts too. And wow, so I got 4 Atari games, 1 Sega Genesis game, and the rest were NES homebrew games. So yeah, I went a little nuts this year at the gaming class, but that's what I do whenever I go there. That's kind of what I'm searching for now, is pretty much all homebrew games. All the other stuff, you can kind of get wherever. I do a lot of thrifting and hitting up rummage sales and things like that, and that's where I like to find the majority of my other retro games. If there's something that I really want, I'll just hit up eBay and pick it up, or maybe even try and win it off of an auction, kind of set a price like, okay, I'm only willing to pay this much, and let's see if I can get it for that. But I'm in no hurry to collect everything, but I do love having a physical collection. So I went absolutely nuts with the pickups. Haven't played even a little bit of them. I've only gotten a chance to stick in a couple of carts so far just to make sure they work. I'm sure they all work. It'll be fine there. But so I have a lot to get through now, and a lot of content that'll keep me busy, and a lot of content that will, or a lot of games that'll help me create content moving forward. So lots and lots going on there. I probably have to slow down a little bit on pickups so I can get through some of these other things. Here, what we can do too is we'll just pretend that Keg's talking about his stuff. Hi, I'm Keg. I'm playing some game that says unicorn in a title, and that's all I ever do, and then I'm going to go play Diablo again. Bye. So there's Keg's segment. Thanks, Keg. Thanks for chiming in with everything that you have going on. So with all that, it's time to refresh my drink, and when I come back, we'll be getting into the topic of the week, which is the Midwest Gaming Classic. See you in a second. All right, then welcome back. My drink has been refreshed, and now we're talking about the Midwest Gaming Classic from a couple of weekends ago. Man, where to start? It was an absolute blast. If you don't attend any of these retro gaming conferences, I definitely recommend you do so. I mean, even just pick one that's closest to you to go check out. They are an absolute blast. This is the only one that I go to, is the Midwest Gaming Classic. For one, it's super close to home. I'm only like, I don't know, maybe a half an hour away, 40 minutes at the most. So it's a quick trip. We always stay the whole weekend just to kind of get away from everything, and that way we can party it up and not have to worry about going anywhere. The hotel is connected right to the convention center. So, and then as we're shopping too, we get to kind of go make dumps at the hotel to be like, oh, all right, we've round one. Let's go make a drop and come back and do some more, and yada, 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 then rinse and repeat. But yeah, it's just a blast. And I have to imagine most of them are pretty similar. The thing that I like so much about the Midwest Gaming Classic is it's got such a huge homebrew presence, which is kind of my shtick. So it's great to meet up with all these people, see all these developers, new projects that are in the works, see what's coming out, new things. It's just, it's so much fun. And this year, I think they had like their largest turnout ever. I want to say it was over like 30,000 people that ended up coming through the doors, I think. So, and how it's structured is Friday is kind of like preview night. So none of the vendors are open, but all the arcades and all the pinball machines are all free to play. The Nestmaker stuff. So in fact, the homebrew room and the Nestmaker stuff, I believe, are open. So you can kind of peruse through there too. It's just the vendors for the most part that are shut down, which is fine. Because then you can kind of take your time, meet some people, play some games without a line, by the way, because on Saturday, by the time Saturday comes around, some of these pinball machines or some of the old classic arcade machines, you're like 2-3 people deep to try and get your turn to jump on a machine, where Friday night you can pretty much walk up to anything and just play, because for one, they limit it. So they only allow so many people in on Friday night. Friday nights have become like the nights to kind of hang out and play games together and chill together. And it's open till midnight too, which is really, really cool. So starts at 6, open till midnight. So you can just grab a drink, hang out, play some games, actually get to talk to one another. So that's kind of like the hangout night. Cause come Saturday, it's an absolute zoo, and which is great. So for myself this year, we've kind of turned Midwest Gaming Classic into, by we, I mean like myself and friends I haven't seen in a long time that are still in the vicinity, but we might not live in the same city any longer. So we've turned it into like the yearly kind of hangout. And I think it might even evolve even more, where we can get some of these folks to come hang out on Fridays as well. But Saturday anyway, because we have the VIG is what they call it, we get to get in like, it's in a half an hour early, half hour, hour early. I don't really remember. But then all my friends started piling in, right? So we did our early morning shopping. And then a friend of mine, Nick, showed up and we hung out with him for a second. And then two more of my friends that I haven't seen in years and years and years showed up. So then I got pulled away to go hang out with them. So yeah, shout out Mike and Jason. It was so good seeing those guys there. And so I got to hang out with those guys for a while. My kids, two of my children showed up as well. My wife was kind enough to drop them off so they could come check it out for a couple hours. And so then I, you know, took time out of the day to, you know, go shopping with them and hang out with them. And then, so yeah, it's this huge day of a ton of stuff to do. And it's hardly relaxing, but it's still a ton of fun. What else? And I also, this year, which was really, really great, was because of the podcast and some of the social stuff I'm doing, I got to meet so many cool people that I've met online or through interviews or whatever. So I got to sit and chat with Nathan and Jordan, who I did an interview for just like, when did we do? I think I did the interview like Tuesday. So it was the first time I got to meet those guys, and that's for their Storied Sword game. So if you haven't listened to last week's episode, be sure to go back that game. It's on Kickstarter right now. I think by the time this comes out, it probably only has like a week or so left, maybe. And they've already blown away their goal. So just it's a matter of, hey, go buy a copy of the game and make sure you get a physical cartridge if that's what you want. Otherwise, they'll have it digital as well. So I got to meet those guys and sit and chat with them for a while. Got to meet other developers in the space, and really just being able to sit around and chat with these people, it's been fabulous. Was introduced to the Homebrew Game Club. So those are a bunch of great guys. They host another podcast called the Homebrew Game Club, and they do way more deep dive into the homebrew games, where I just kind of babble about quick little snippets here and there and then have an interview. But yeah, if you want actual information about games, go check those guys out. I've been a fan of their podcast for a long time, and if you like homebrew stuff, you should too. But yeah, super cool people. So I got to hang out with those guys for a while. Got to meet Business. If you're into any of the Twitch streaming stuff, he does a shtick where he has a Super Nintendo as a puppet, and he's been doing it for a while now, and he's a Twitch partner, has pretty big following. So I got to meet up with him at a panel, and we got to chat for a while. So that was really, really cool meeting him. Yeah, just all kinds of the fun stuff. I can't recommend it enough, and I'm already plotting for next year. So, yeah, good times. But that's it. That's all we're talking about with that. I've been babbling enough. It's hard to do a podcast by yourself. So I don't know. We might have to make sure we get some more people on, because doing this I'm boring myself talking. So anyway, you're done listening to me babble. What I'm going to do now, let's cue up a little music. And when we come back, you'll get your interview I had with Joseph from Rivet Gun Games as we get into his new NES game, Sunset Land. See you in a minute. Hey, what's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the pod. Right now, I have the pleasure of speaking with Joseph Blair, the creator of a new NES game that's coming out. We'll get into logistics as far as when it's coming, how far along it is, and all that kind of stuff. Sunset Land. But yeah, Joseph, thanks so much for joining me, and why don't you just kind of give me a rundown as far as like what the game's about, what got you into it, all that kind of fun stuff.
Sure, yeah. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me on. Always fun to talk about this kind of stuff. So yeah, Sunset Land, it's sort of a Metroidvania NES homebrew game. I've been working on it for a few years now. I sort of got into it sort of late in the pandemic when I heard about this really nice tool called Nestmaker. It's sort of like a game engine, a little bit like Unity or an Unreal or something like that, but it lets you develop games for the NES, as you could probably guess from the name. So I started fooling around with that. And, you know, a little over 2 years later, I have a NES game that's pretty close to completion. There's still, I got a lot of good playtesting feedback when we met at Midwest Gaming Classic. That was a lot of fun. Yeah. But yeah, I got a lot of people playing the game there, and got a lot of good feedback, making a few more edits. But at the moment, what I'm really looking to do is figure out the best way to get it onto physical cartridges.
Gotcha. And, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying, ideally, you know, I'd have, you know, like a physical cartridge, you know, complete with like a box, manual, all that good stuff.
Yeah, so I was actually curious about that as far as how far along you are in the development process. You said it's pretty close to completion. Do you have like a target date of completion you're trying to get to, or?
I'm not going to set forward like a release date just yet because I'm not quite sure. I've never done the whole physical cartridge process before. I've released a few games with this other indie game studio that I work at called Symbrio. We've released a few games on Steam, but I've never done a you know, a physical run of a game before. So I'm a little hesitant on putting out a release date just yet.
Okay, yeah, I was going to ask you that too. So you have worked on other games prior to this. Okay. Give us what are the other games that you've worked on?
So Sunset Land I'm doing under Rivet Gun Games, which is sort of my one-man studio. It's basically all my, like, you know, sort of Nestmaker projects, stuff like that. But previously I've worked at this small indie game studio based out of Charlotte, North Carolina, where I live right now, called Symbrio. And we've released a few top-down shooters on Steam. We released this Mafia-themed top-down shooter called Man of Honor several years ago. I think it was back in 2017 now, so that's a little longer ago than several years ago now. It's kind of like an arcadey score-based shooter kind of game. And then a few years ago, we released another game called Seasons of the Sorcerer, which is also a top-down game, but instead of, it's like a top-down shooter where instead of using guns, you have different spells that you switch between. There's also a big emphasis in that game on, like, you know, using the environment to your advantage. Like, you can use certain spells to, like, possess trees to attack your enemies. You can burn pretty much all the wooden objects in the game. And it's called Seasons of the Sorcerer because each level is set to a different piece of this classical music called the Four Seasons. There's like 12 movements of that. So each of like the 12 different levels in the game is set to like a different piece of that song. So those are the previous things that I've done. Oh, we also released some tools on the Unity App Store. This really nice one in particular called Fair 2D. It's sort of like a like an add-on thing for Unity. And you can use it to develop like 2D terrain for games that you develop pretty easily with that tool. It's pretty nice.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, that's previous stuff we've done.
And those other games are on Steam?
Yeah, Seasons of the Sorcerer and Man of Honor are on Steam. And the tool I mentioned is on the Unity Asset Store.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
Now, if I remember when I talked to you at the Gaming Classic, you said you're kind of a one-man show with your new title here, Sunset Land, right?
Yes,
you
did the graphics, with the NES games, I'm a one-man show. Like, Rivet Gun Games is pretty much just me. I taught myself. This is the first time, actually, that I've been doing, you know, pixel art. I did the music using Famitracker. I hired someone to do like the cover art for the game, but other than that, it's pretty much all been me.
Nice. Why don't you give me so how long have you been working on it? 2 years?
Yeah, a little over 2 years now, I think.
So what's that process look like then? So when you want to create a new game, you're going to do it completely yourself. Do you have like a roadmap to say, okay, I'm going to do the graphics first, then I'm going to work on the music, then I'm going to work on the programming, or what's kind of your rundown with creating a new game like that?
So the way I do it usually is I sort of develop it in chunks. Like I'll start out designing some graphics or character models. Like in the previous games I worked on were 3D, so they used character models. They're like a 2D control scheme, but they have like 3D graphics. But yeah, like for Sunset Land, I did I started out by designing some of the sprites and enemy models, things like that. And then I started developing like the initial areas of the game. So I have enough, you know, sort of material, I guess, to test the basic concepts with. And then I see how they work. I tweak them and then I sort of move on from there. I start designing, you know, new enemies and new obstacles for like the next area of the game. And it just sort of keeps going like that until and then once all of those areas of the game are, you know, designed in sort of a rough draft state, I'll go back in again and revisit like some of the early areas of the game, start polishing up, tweaking the graphics, you know, making improvements to the gameplay based on feedback I've gotten. So it's sort of like a circular process, I guess you could say.
Okay.
Until the game's like in a fully polished state.
Nice. Yeah, that's got to be a lot of juggling to try and get, because I know a lot of these people that do even like the Netsmaker projects, they'll team up and they'll have somebody do the art and somebody do the music and somebody do, you know, kind of the programming, I guess, as much as there is to do with Netsmaker. But I also wanted to talk to you about your time so far with Netsmaker. How are you enjoying it? Is it great too? I've played with it a little bit myself, and I dig it. I think it's a super, super good idea. I haven't gotten far enough along to have an opinion of it, to be honest with you, but I see the creations that are made with it, and I'm super excited to try my hand at it one of these years when I have some time, which will be never, but we'll see. But yeah, give me an idea as far as what your thoughts are on Netsmaker as a whole.
Oh yeah, I think it's a great tool. I've had a lot of fun working with it. There's certainly like some, you know, weird glitches sometimes that you run into with it. But I've always wanted to design a game for the NES. I didn't necessarily grow up with the console myself, but it's always been like one of my favorite game consoles. So it's always been a dream of mine to make a game for it. And I don't think I would have really been able to without Netsmaker. It gives you so much of the sort of the foundational stuff laid out for you. Really helps you get over that, you know, initial hurdle. Like, you know, building all of the collision physics, level design tools, things like that, working all of that out yourself would be, that would be like, you know, developing a whole nother game, maybe even more so almost. Having all of that stuff ready for you, you know, from Netsmaker, that just really helps the project along. Makes it way less intimidating for someone like me who's kind of new to NES development.
Yeah, same. So I started doing the shmup tutorial.
Oh yeah.
So I got into that a little bit, and I was having fun with it too. But then whatever life happened, and I started doing other things. And that's just like me. I have like 80,000 ideas, so I sit around and don't do any of them except sit on a podcast and talk to other people that are actually doing stuff. But no, I think it's a great tool, and it's super cool to see all the different creations that come out of using this tool. I was sitting in on the Bite Off at the Gaming Classic, and you know, just seeing, I actually did a stream of all the Bite Off games it was about 2 weeks leading up to the Gaming Classic, and I streamed all the Bite Off games, and it was just, it's so cool to see these creations that, you know, they're not cookie cutter games, that people are really making some unique stuff with it.
There's some really impressive stuff in there this year. This is the first year that I did the Bite Off, actually. And I was really, I don't think what I created wasn't all that polished by the end of the Bite Off, I think. But it was really great for like getting me started on a new project, you know. Giving me like that kick to get going. But yeah, no, there's some incredible stuff there, like the Pizza Portals game. That was amazing.
Yeah, super cool.
Yeah, yeah. There was this platformer where you controlled a cube. That was really cool.
Yeah, I really liked that one too. I think it was called Cube.
And yeah.
That was really good too. I liked that. What was the other one? It was like, it started with an A. It was like Aerial, something like that. It was, you were like an alien. And it was kind of a sci-fi thing, but I really liked their idea of like the overworld. So you got through like a stage, and then you got in your ship and flew to another planet, and then got to the next like space station, I guess.
I think I played a little bit of that one. I don't remember the name though.
I don't remember it either.
Fortunately.
But yeah, no, there was absolutely a ton of like great stuff. So like with your game, Sunset Land, give me an idea. Like, I loved a lot of the mechanics. So I played it. I'm all over the place now. I think, the full demo, I think. Because I got to the point where I really couldn't get any further. I got to a point where it was kind of almost blocked off at two ends, where you had, like, the beam with the, where you ran into it and you just died.
You actually can get further than that if you shoot the, there's like at the top of the beam, there's like a cannon that's sort of emitting the beam.
If you shoot that,
then you can go beyond. Yeah.
No, I'm mad at myself.
That was actually one of the changes I was making, because I know at MGC, half the people who played it, about half of them figured that out on their own, and then the other half didn't. And so, you know, when I was there, I had to tell them, oh, you know, you can shoot that thing that's emitting the beam. That's something that I actually did tweak a little bit to try and make it a little bit more obvious what you're supposed to do. Because a lot of people were actually having some confusion with that.
Okay, yeah, yeah, and that's where I thought, I was like, okay, yeah. Well, maybe this is it. This is the, he kind of blocked it off at two ends, so that was the demo, and maybe it's fleshed out, but it, they don't want us to go any further yet, so, okay.
Yeah, no, there's actually a whole dungeon beyond that.
Oh, my gosh, all right, yeah. Well, now I'm definitely going to have to go back
so
and play it.
If you ever want to go back and check it out again, yeah.
I definitely
sorry
will.
Sorry about that.
No, that's great. I yeah, I'll restream it
yeah.
And get further then. That'll
okay,
be cool. Give me, like... the concept and like the inspiration behind the game, like some of your mechanics were super cool, like, and you know, maybe that's just something I hadn't played before, but I love like the your jumping mechanic, and I also love the idea of having only so much energy, which, well, then I found out you can actually get, like, you know, container hearts, for the lack of a better term, and then like mm-hmm. extra energy found those in the demo. But like some of the, like, I love the jumping mechanic and how you can actually use it as, like an offensive maneuver as well. So you can basically jump on people's heads as long as you have the energy to do so.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just, it was super unique. Give me an idea of like, where'd you come up with that? Did you see it somewhere else?
So the jumping mechanic, with the, you know, sort of the limited amount of energy, but basically being able to continue to air jump as long as you have energy. That was sort of the first mechanic I came up with for the game. Everything else sort of sprung out of there. Although it was a little different initially, it didn't release, like, you know, that attack that would allow you to damage enemies. That's something I added later. But
okay.
The whole idea of, like, being able to navigate through, like, you know, these platforming challenges with this, you know, like a triple or quadruple jump or something. That's sort of where the first idea for the game came from. And I'm not sure if I've seen anything. There might be another game with mechanics similar to that. I can't. There wasn't like a specific one that I thought of off the top of my head. Just the general idea for it came from, like, kind of platforming games with Celeste. Like Celeste, you know how you have like the air dash and everything, and you can use that to get through platforming challenges. That was definitely one of the things that I was thinking of. And then also, I guess, just with the sort of the combination of the shooting platforming challenges, Mega Man always plays a big role in that. The Mega Man games are sort of like my level design Bible. So
yeah.
Pretty much every game I develop, like, those games have probably had some influence on them. Trying to think if there's anything else. The whole idea of, like, having your character sort of travel from town to town in, like, an overworld that's sort of Metroidvania-like, but also kind of linear. The idea for that was came from Simon's Quest. I always... liked the way the world was laid out in that game.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me a little bit of what the heck is the Zelda 2 Link to the Past? Is that no? That's
Adventures of Link.
Yeah, Adventures of Link. Yeah,
the
NES
the side-scrolling,
one. Where,
the one with the side scrolling segments.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're like side scrolling, but then you run into a town. yeah, with you, but you don't have like the, you know, like the overworld like Adventures of Link. But it's still, I thought it was really unique because you run into the first town and they kind of tell you about the mines and then, you know, you can go down there. But what I found was really cool was there's a bit of a strategy to it then too, because you can go into like the next screen, let's say, and you can look at what the enemies are doing and can kind of say like, okay, I have this much energy. If I, you know, double jump here to shoot that guy and then wait, then I can jump on this guy's head. You know, it's so there's some strategy to it as well. It's not just run as fast as you can and platform. It's a huge mix of a bunch of stuff, which I thought it was super fascinating and yeah, super excited to
yeah, you actually
play
got
more of
me
it.
To remember another influence there. The whole idea of having like each screen be like kind of a self-contained challenge like that, how you can, you know,
yeah.
go ahead and then, you know, back off and then go back onto the screen, that came from Battle Kid, which was
I don't know
if
that one.
Played that. That was
no,
a
I haven't.
That was a really early NES homebrew game. I think it came out actually back in like 2010. Difficult game. Kind of in the little bit like I Want to Be the Guy too, if you ever played that. But Battle Kids, it was sort of like Sunset Land in that you know, it doesn't scroll so much, but you just, you know, move from sort of static screen to static screen, and each screen sort of has its own challenge on that. Yeah, that definitely came from Battle Kid. But yeah, I'm glad that you felt that you sort of had to plan ahead, because that was definitely one of the things that I went into, you know, wanted to make it sort of a game that you couldn't just rush through.
Yeah.
Something that you had to sort of think about before you just jumped in. So I'm glad that worked.
Yeah. Now, how did you look at, like, okay, I'm just, you know, kind of thinking ahead here. Mm-hmm. If I get, you know, way more life and way more energy, did you look ahead at some of the scenes to go like, okay, how can I still make this difficult with somebody that has a ton of energy and a ton of life? Or I don't know if it's being capped at a certain amount.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. So in the first area, you can only get one more life and one more energy.
Right.
So for that first dungeon, I was able to sort of calibrate the difficulty based on you only having, either three or four life or three or four energy. So that was a little bit easier to work out. But yeah, you're right. As you get later into the game and things open up, there's a lot more, you know, room for different values of energy. I made sure to test the game so that it's possible to beat it with only three hearts and three energy. I want people to be able to do like a, you know, sort of three heart run like they do in, you know, Legend of Zelda games and things like that as like a challenge. But I wanted to make sure that that was sufficiently difficult. So another way too that the difficulty's balanced a little bit is in the full game. This wasn't there in the demo, but in the full game, there'll also be an expert difficulty where enemies will do increased damage and they'll also be faster and things like that. Health drops will be less frequent. So gotcha. Like if you actually start out on expert, you're going to want to know where that extra health and extra energy power-ups are right away, because certain enemies, like with only three hearts on expert, they'll be able to kill you in like one hit. So that's another, when you're playing on expert, you sort of need to know already where all the power-ups are hidden if you want. I mean, it's possible to beat that with three hearts too, but that's a much steeper challenge, I guess.
So now the different difficulties weren't in the demo, right?
No, only in the demo that you probably downloaded, it's only normal mode. I don't think it even gives you a difficulty selection. You could choose different difficulties in the version that was at Midwest Gaming Classic, though.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, a few people did try expert, too, so that was fun to see.
Gotcha. Yeah. Nice.
I actually had one person come by who he actually played through the entire game on normal on like Saturday over the course of like an hour or so. He was really into it. And then he came back the next day and tried the game on expert. And he was trying a lot of like crazy challenges, like sort of avoiding power-ups and trying to take on like severe, you know, challenges with sort of low energy and low health. He had a lot of trouble doing that, but it was a lot of fun to see him go through that. And he actually did manage to beat the game on expert too. So that was a lot of fun to watch.
Well, that's reassuring when you have people coming back to play your game at a convention.
It really is. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Makes me feel like I'm, you know, onto something at least.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you talked about trying to get it on physical media. I know, Nest Maker kind of gives you that option, right? Like out of the box, they have a way that you can flash it to media.
Yeah, so you have to buy like an external flasher.
Right.
I think they sell that at like Infinite Lives or one of those websites that's affiliated with Nest Maker. But yeah, there's an option within like the editor to flash your game, to like build your game and flash it to a cartridge. So yeah, that's also something it makes easier.
So are you thinking of doing like something like a Kickstarter or anything like that to see kind of gauge how many people would be interested to put this on physical? Because I mean, I'm a physical collector, so I'm all about like, if you put this thing on physical, I want a copy. maybe we'll buy a copy. So,
was thinking I'm not really planning on doing a Kickstarter or anything like that. Kickstarter's another thing I don't really have all that much experience with and sort of want to ease myself into that world.
Sure.
I was planning on just doing like an initial run of, you know, like 100 copies or so. And if I'm able to sell all of those, great. If I'm not able to sell them all, then I guess I'll eat, you know, some of that cost for however many I don't sell. But sure, it's sort of worth the risk for me to, you know, give that a shot.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
What did you encounter, or what challenges, I guess, did you encounter during like the development process? Did you run into anything where you're like, oh, my gosh, there's this bug I can't get through, or I'm not quite sure how to figure this out?
Oh, yeah, there were several. I had this one issue where, and I'm still, to be honest with you, I'm still not entirely sure, like, what was causing this issue in the first place, but where it would be something that almost never happened. But on certain screens, sometimes when you, like, came on, all the sprites would just sort of get jumbled up whenever you did, like, certain actions or something like that. It was really crazy and was very hard to test for because it's something that maybe it would happen like, you know, one every 100 or so times that you went on to an initial screen. Eventually, what I did is I just sort of switched like how some of the frames of the main character's animations were oriented within like the the sprite databanks for the game.
Sure.
So I like sort of reoriented that. I stopped using a certain area of it, and I moved like the jump animation and like the shooting animation into these other areas. And it seems to have fixed the problem. That was was like about a year ago, and I haven't seen that glitch since.
Okay.
So that was, or at least if it's still there, it's so rare by this point that it's something that I can probably tolerate dealing with.
Gotcha.
That was a major issue. I'm trying to think if there was anything else. There were a few sort of fancier programming tricks I tried with, like, you know, bank switching to sort of free up extra space in you know, certain banks of the game, so I'd be able to like try and add in some more fancy things. Mm-hmm. But when I tried that, it caused some other sort of glitches in the background layer of the screen. So I decided against doing that until I'm a little bit more experienced with Nestmaker. Other than that, sure, there haven't really been too many huge, glitches that I've run into. The software works pretty well. And even those glitches that I mentioned, they were just sort of, none of them were game breaking. They were just sort of, unprofessional and, inconveniences. So, I guess that's kind of a testament to how good of a tool Nestmaker is, honestly.
Yeah. How much, programming goes into like Nestmaker? I mean, I know that you can get in there and, you know, write assembly for it and everything else, or add in scripts or whatever. What is, and I almost have to, some of these people's projects, even with Nestmaker, I see it, I'm like, hey, there's no tutorial for that anywhere. So they must have written a lot of code to make some of these projects. So how open, I haven't gotten into it far enough, how open is like the code base for you to be able to go in and edit? Can you pretty much edit anything? Or
you can edit anything you want in the engine. It's totally open.
Oh, cool.
Certain things are maybe a little bit hard to find, but it's all, you're able to edit all of it.
Mm.
So that's really not much of an issue, which is very nice. Certain game engines are kind of annoying about that kind of stuff.
Right, right.
But I guess if you want to like make a game without any coding with Nestmaker, it's possible, but it's going to be pretty simple. Like, if you follow along with those module tutorials, you can make a game without writing any code of your own, but you're going to create something that's, you know, kind of generic.
Right.
You know, perfectly cool for like a first project or something, but probably not something you're going to want to sell.
Right.
but the community is fantastic. Like the Facebook group for Nestmaker and also the forum for it. There's so many cool fixes for things in there. So many scripts that people are perfectly willing to let you use. And that definitely helped me out a lot, too. That being able to just, you know, peruse like the Nestmaker forums and find out, oh, here's a script that, you know, lets you use this. Okay, this is similar to what I want to do. Maybe, you know, I can download this, modify it a little bit, insert it into the game. Yeah, that kind of those kinds of resources are invaluable. Because assembly is not not necessarily a programming language that's just easy to dive into.
Oh my god, it's a spaghetti! Yeah. It's a spaghetti code mess. I was looking at it and I was just like, yeah, I actually started taking a code or a code. I actually started taking a course on assembly. Specifically the 6502 to you know, kind of hone my skills there before I dove into doing something maybe with Nestmaker or maybe just doing it with the code. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this is a debacle. So I'm just, my background, I'm a software developer. That's my real job. So I get it. I understand how things are working and all that. But yeah, I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that this is how stuff used to be written.
Oh yeah, it's crazy. I took a course in it a long time ago as well, back in college, because I did computer science. But I pretty much remembered nothing about it from the time I, you know, from that course to the time I started using Nestmaker. So I pretty much had to jump in fresh.
Yeah. It sounds great. Again, I can't believe some of these projects that are coming out. That's kind of what really sparked my interest into doing, getting more into the homebrew scene in general, was because I saw Nestmaker and I don't remember where I saw it. I think it was an advertisement on Facebook or something to that effect. And I was just like, what is this? I want to make a game. I was like, okay, let me look down this. And then started realizing all these homebrews that were out there. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I'm so in. So then I started buying them for everything that I could, whether I downloaded them for an emulator or bought physical copies. I've been down the rabbit hole, so I'm not coming out anytime soon.
It's been great for the homebrew community. I think there's a lot of great homebrew games that were developed using Nestmaker already, even. Like Dungeons and Doom Nights, that game's really
Game is fantastic. Yeah. I love that game. Last year, not there 2 years ago, I bought the his big whatever, like special edition. So I got like the cloth map and the gold cartridge and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, cool.
I love that game. I finished that one from start to, you know, and that, yeah.
That's, yeah, no, it's really impressive.
Yeah, super good job with that one. What's been the most exciting aspect of working on Sunset Land?
That's an interesting question. I guess, just being able to develop a game for this older hardware. Like I said before, it's always been kind of a dream of mine to make a game for like a retro console like that. And I think it really has improved my skills a lot, like as a programmer, because you have to worry so much about how things are organized and, you know, how much space is being taken up because you're working with so little. Yeah. I think it made me a better game designer too, because when you're working with those really tight constraints, it sort of forces you to think in more creative ways. So that's definitely one of the things I think that's been very exciting about it. The other thing too is just I've been learning a lot of new skills with the game too. Like I said, you know, I got started doing pixel art on this game. This is the first project I've done pixel art for. First project I've written music for. I think just sort of the putting me in a situation where, you know, I'm getting myself to learn these new skills. That's been a really exciting thing, I think.
Yeah, I could imagine that. That's a lot of skills to get into trying to do so, but I get it. That's I love all that too. You know, I love art. I love music. I love games.
And I think, too, working on, like, you know, an 8-bit game for the NES, it's actually a good place to sort of start developing those skills, too. Like, if you're getting started with pixel art, getting started on like, you know, an 8-bit game where you have like limited colors that you can work with, limited color palettes that, you know, your character can have, having those constraints really helps you, I think, learn the basics more effectively than if you just sort of jumped in like in Unity or Unreal and you just have everything at your fingertips, you know?
Sure, sure. No, that makes sense. I got a couple last things here. What do you hope players will kind of take away from their experience with your game?
Well, I'm hoping they'll have a good time, obviously. I hope that they will enjoy the game enough to, like, when they beat it, to maybe play it again on expert to sort of challenge themselves or maybe go for like some sort of self-imposed challenges, like doing like a 3 heart, 3 energy run, maybe try speed running. That's another, I'd love to see like somebody actually attempt to speed run one of my games someday. That's also another kind of dream of mine. And I did design, Sunset Land. I don't think you can ever really like design a game for speed running, but I did sort of put like, you know, I had sort of speed running in mind when I was doing some of the level design for Sunset Land.
Some of those people that do really that cool is, some of those people that speed run games, I'm just like, I don't get it.
Like, I know
the thought process. And then when they go through like trying to glitch the game to get, you know, like seconds off and things like that, I'm like, the amount of time it must take to figure that out and then try and master that glitch and then put it in your your playthrough every time that you play the game. I'm like, that's
it's like a way of life. And I mean, we're getting to the point too where for certain games, I think for like Super Mario Brothers, some of the, you know, human speedrunners for that game are getting close to playing the game like as perfectly as it possibly can be, like playing the game as perfectly as machine could, basically. That's insane to just think about that, you know?
Yeah, I don't have
perfected it to that extent.
Right.
It's way beyond speed running in general. It's just way beyond my skill level, I think, and way beyond the amount of time I'm, you know, willing to put into any individual game. But
right,
it's really fun to watch.
It is. I agree with you. It's super fun to watch. But yeah, as far as trying to do it myself, nah.
Yeah.
I just no. But yeah, I appreciate the people that do it for my entertainment.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
So. I guess, do you have anything else you want to talk about or get plugs or anything that you want to get out to everybody?
Not too much. Just, you know, to look out for, you know, Sunset Land hopefully coming out on physical media later this year. I want to do digital editions, too, after I release the physical cartridges. I'll probably do something on Steam. And hopefully on Nintendo Switch. I think that would be really nice.
That would be cool.
Yeah. I've heard several people who've played the game have said, you really got to get this on Switch, too. So it seems like there's some interest in that. And Switch is, I think, probably the sort of the best platform, the best console platform, at least, for publishing kind of retro games.
I would say
so. It has the biggest retro audience.
There's just something about retro games that feel like you should play them on the Switch. Like if you're gonna play a retro game on a modern console, if I have my choice,
playing it on like a PS5 just feels weird.
Right, exactly. I'm like, nah, this has to be played on Nintendo. So yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
So how can give us where can everybody find you? How can they keep in touch and keep an eye on the development of the game?
So you can follow me on Twitter at Steel River Zero. I think it's on the card I gave you at the Twitter at Steel River Zero. If you want to check out my website, that's rivetgungames.com. And let's see, anything else? Oh, if you want to check out any of the previous games I've worked on, that would be SymbrioCorp.com. Or you could just look up Man of Honor or Seasons of the Sorcerer on Steam.
Wonderful. All right. Well, I think that's a wrap. Thanks so much
for
jumping on here. I super appreciate it. We'll look forward. And I'll have all your information, everything in the show notes. What's up, everybody? Now it's time to give our takes of the week, or rather my take of the week. Not much. I just want to say thank you so much for Joseph, or thank you so much to Joseph. Words are freaking hard. Thanks, Joseph, for coming on the podcast and discussing Sunset Land. Really appreciate it. Super looking forward to playing that whole game when it comes out, hopefully later this year, and, you know, hopefully getting my hands on a physical copy as well. I'll have all the information for Sunset Land in the show notes, so make sure you check that out. Pay attention, follow along, download the demo for sure. It's definitely worth a playthrough. Super fun. If you don't want to play the demo, you can watch me play the demo. Just search through my history on YouTube or Twitch, or probably YouTube is probably the best place because it holds on to the recording, so you can find my stream of the demo there. I think that's it. I think we're going to end this one. Thanks so much for listening. And, yeah, we're done. That's it. We'll see you in a couple weeks. Peace.